Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Neuland Laboratories Limited Q2 FY23 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ravi Udeshi from EY. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you, Yashasvi. Good evening, friends. We welcome you to the Q2 FY23 earnings call of Neuland Laboratories Limited. To take us through the results and to answer your questions, we have with us the top management from Neuland, represented by Mr. Sucheth Davuluri, Vice Chairman and CEO, Mr. Saharsh Davuluri, Vice Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Venkata Bhardwaj Gulapudi, General Manager, Finance and Accounts, and Mr. Sajeev Emmanuel Medikonda, Head Corporate Planning and Strategy. We will start the call with a brief overview of the financials by Venkata Bhardwaj, and then Saharsh will give you a broad highlight of the business trends and what he is observing in the markets. Post this, we will open it up for the Q&A session. As usual, the standard safe harbor clause applies as we start the call. With that said, I now hand over the floor to Venkata Bhardwaj. Over to you, Venkata Bhardwaj.
Thank you very much, Ravi. A very good evening to all friends, and warm welcome to you all for our Q2 FY23 earnings call. I think that you must have seen the presentation which Ravi just mentioned, and it is put up on our website, and also we have uploaded both on BSE as well as on NSE websites. As always, any comments on the content of this presentation which we have sent will be highly appreciated, and we will do our best to give out additional data points which will help you to analyze the data points much better. I will briefly talk about financials now. The total income for this quarter is 293.9 crores as against 258.1 crores in Q2 FY22. This was largely driven by growth in our GDS specialty and CMS businesses. Our EBITDA for the quarter was 69.4 crores with EBITDA margin of 23.6%, an increase of 690 basis points over previous year, which was 16.7%, and it has been increased by 1,050 basis points based on sequential basis. I would like to give some context on the increase in EBITDA margins on a yearly basis. The business mix has shifted in favor of high-margin products. While we have continued to witness volatility in input prices, these have experienced some easing on relative basis. We have continued to focus on execution excellence and to optimize costs to ensure minimization of external events that we are facing. We have also witnessed high manpower costs and other costs arising mostly out of Unit 3 commercialization that we did earlier. We continue to maintain high levels of inventory to avoid any future possible disruptions which are happening globally as of now. I would like to share that our focus on improving the business mix has also led to a continued increase in the gross margins. Gross margin was 56.2% in Q2 FY23 compared to 53.4% in Q1 FY23 and 49.2% in Q2 FY22. Further, we expect the shift in portfolio mix to continue to drive higher gross margins. Profit after tax was at 38.3 crores as compared to 20.3 crores last year. This quarter, EPS is at 29.9 rupees per share. On a half-yearly basis, the total income was 515.6 crores, an increase of 11.8% from the same period last year. The EBITDA increased by 39.1% to 98.4 crores as against 70.7 crores in H1 FY22. The EBITDA margins came in at 19.1% compared to 15.3% for the year earlier, for the reasons which we have discussed just now and including Q1 performance. In terms of cash and cash equivalents, we have 5.3 crores as on balance sheet date at the end of September. We continue to make investments in the future, and also for CapEx, we have spent about 34.2 crores in H1 FY23. And also, if we talk about our CapEx plan, it is on track and with commercialization of products happening and also for the future prospects. I would like to mention that even though we had done substantial CapEx till date, our net gearing ratio continues to be low. As of now, it is at 0.2%, I mean 2x of. With that, I would like to hand over the call to Sahash for his remarks, and thank you very much.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Thank you, Bharadwaj, and my apologies if my tone is not very enthusiastic after the cricket match that we just witnessed. I think in terms of the quarter itself, you know, I'll add a few comments on top of what Bharadwaj has already said, and then maybe we can open it up for Q&A. I think in the quarter in many ways is a representation of the direction that we have been steering our business towards. I think the growth driven by both specialty and CMS business, it has meant that, you know, we have healthy gross margins flowing through to the rest of the P&L. And while there is continued uncertainty around raw material prices, we have seen certain softening which has benefited us right now, along with favorable exchange rate as well. I think other than that, important is that, you know, we have our highest ever revenues in the specialty segment. I think we clocked around 96 crores, which is quite promising. Products like Donepezil, Ezetimibe, and new products like Paliperidone and Apixaban, these have all contributed significantly, and we're very excited about these products. They help us keep healthy gross margins. And we see newer products in our portfolio to have a greater traction as we go along. And with regards to CMS business, we've seen again highest revenues at around 97 crores, which is also, I think, as indicated, a growth of over 40% year on year. And the CMS pipeline is also witnessing a continued growth in terms of molecules moving to commercial stage and contributing to revenues. We've also seen some early stage projects get added to our business this quarter as well. And we are continuing to see increasing traction from new customers as our ability to execute difficult late stage projects distinguishes us and makes us a highly regarded CMO. In terms of the overall business, we are seeing significant shift towards higher margin business for the long term, which has been our stated aim. However, we must remain cautious about how business mix, raw material prices, or even forex could negatively impact these margins in the future. So I think that's something that we would like to, you know, investors, analysts, and all stakeholders to be mindful of. And I think from another dimension, Neuland has always strived to create value for all its stakeholders, and in line with the same, I'm pleased to share that as part of our ESG efforts, EcoVadis has recently awarded Neuland the sustainability rating of silver during the September quarter. I'd also like to mention that our Unit 3 is ramping up well and continues to support our growth. We can see that some of our late-stage CMS projects are being scaled up here. And as some of these products scale up, we see that the Unit 3 utilization is gradually going to grow up. And and even as it contributes to rising operating expenses, we will see operating leverage continue to kick in. And I think we continue to see the kind of momentum we have witnessed in H1. We think it's a sustainable kind of momentum, and therefore we continue to remain optimistic about the future of the business. So maybe these are some of the high-level comments, so I'll kind of pause here and open it up for Q&A. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have a first question from the line of Siddhant Maheshwari from Banyan Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, sir. We would like to know how significant is revenue from Levitrace FM for the company, as a percentage of total revenue.
Yeah, we don't disclose at a product level what's the percentage of the contribution. So it's definitely one of our top 5 or 10 products, but we don't have that information.
Okay. But sir, still maybe some broad idea, like can it be like 10, broad number, like is it falling in the, let's say, around 10% of the total?
It's one of our top 10 products for the company and one of our top 5 products in the generic side.
So I think, Siddhant, to answer your question, even as probably it hasn't left
it. Sorry to interrupt, sir. Your voice is breaking right now.
Okay, so just to answer your question, Siddhant, Levitracetam is still a good contributor, is among our top prime products, and if you see this quarter, prime contributed to 30% of our revenues, and within that, Levitracetam is in the top 5 products.
Okay, fine, sir. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you. A reminder to participants to press star and 1 to ask a question. We have our next question from the line of Keshav from Raksan Investors. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, sir. Congrats for astonishing performance. Firstly, there are a few trends playing out pertaining to which I would like to understand how we are positioned. So, though your opening statement has allayed any fears, but still for the sake of repetition. So, one thing is that we've seen, we have small, mid-sized biotechs as our clients, and we are seeing a tremendous amount of innovation from this space in the past decade. But it has been also an era of ample financial liquidity. So, firstly, do you think that as a business model, our clients might be relatively vulnerable and they might reprioritize their assets or might actually face difficulty funding their early stage pipelines? Or are we seeing any such signs of slowdown, talks of a slowdown or difficulties getting newer clients?
I think a lot of the customers we work on the CMS front are biotech companies, as you mentioned, Keshav. But also I think it's important to understand that a biotech company is not necessarily, a venture-backed company. You know, a lot of the companies we work with, especially the ones where we have more advanced molecules, these are all either NASDAQ-listed or New York Stock Exchange-listed companies. And they have market caps in excess of $2-3 billion. Some of them have $10-15 market caps. So I think the biotech category is perhaps a little loosely defined. But for us, you know, the biotechs, especially the ones where the assets are in late clinical phase, these are all, you know, multi-billion-dollar market cap companies. So they are a little bit more resilient than some of the early stage companies that you are perhaps referring to.
Got it, sir. And sir, secondly, apart from probably the complexity required in doing deuteration that we've spoken of, are there any other factors as well because of which deuterated molecules have hardly seen any commercialization in the market as yet? Because as a concept, it sounds too good to not be leveraged in a big way. Like, simplistically, should it not bring in many candidates with good efficacy that get rejected due to their toxicity profiles or other 505B2 opportunities?
See, I think again, you know, the caveat that, you know, we are not really drug discovery experts, but just, you know, someone who has a specialization in deuterated chemistry. I think what we understand from the marketplace is while deuterated molecules are safer and more efficacious in nature, I think there have been a lot of challenges in getting commercial approvals for these drugs. And I think there are many factors which, frankly speaking, we as an API maker don't understand. But having said that, I think over the last 6 months, we've come across a fairly significant number of clinical candidates of deuterated molecules. So I do believe somewhere that in the years to come, there shall be more deuterated drugs out there in the market. But I think, again, when it comes to deuteration, I think there are several other factors to be considered, and therefore, you know, it's hard to answer your question as to why there are not more deuterated drugs in the market right now. But we are seeing more and more candidates in terms of assets in the clinic or early stage clinic.
Great, sir. I'll come back in with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd like to remind the participants to press star and one to ask a question. We have our next question from the line of Kunal from Carnelian. Please go ahead. Mr. Kunal, can you please unmute your line? I believe Mr. Kunal is disconnected. We'll take the next question from the line of Midun, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my question. Congrats for my set of numbers. My question is regarding the peptide molecules in our pipeline. We have been developing semaglutide and liraglutide for past 4 years, I think. Can you give me more color on this? Have you filed any DMO for something or any update on this?
So I think when it comes to the peptides that we have in our portfolio and which we have been developing, you are right that we have been working on liraglutide and semaglutide, and we have made significant progress in the lab. We were looking, this is not a small molecule, so therefore we are not looking to straight away go file a DMF, because we need working very closely with a formulator to ensure that we have the right product which meets their need. And even as we are looking for the right customer for these two products, we have also started development on more molecules in the peptide portfolio. So as soon as we have the right customers, right partners for these products...
Sorry to interrupt, sir. Your voice is not clear.
We will, as soon as we find the right partners for these products, we will scale them up. You will see the DMF being filed. Can you hear me? Were you able to get what I had mentioned?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So even as I was saying that we are looking for the right partners for these products, we have gone further because we have done the work in the lab for these products. We have added more products to our portfolio, and even there we are seeing good interest in those products. So I think you will find that in our product list, a product called difelikefalin as well as tirzepatide, both also we have been working on for the past 6 months or so.
Thanks. My next question is regarding the molecule tirzepatide. Are we seeing any demand for this molecule? How is the customer traction for this molecule?
So this is a recently approved molecule. So we are seeing good traction, but we would be expecting certain small development quantities going out over the next 12 to 18 months or so. But from a commercial perspective, this is a long-term bet both for us as well as for our customers.
I think this one is a patented molecule, right?
Yeah, it has been recently approved. It will be under patent, yes.
So are we seeing a customer demand for this molecule? I think there is only one customer.
Yeah, this is for generic market. So we are seeing interest from generic customers who are looking for their pipeline, for people who are looking to file a NC-1 filing, looking at a first to file opportunities. Those are the kind of customers who are showing interest in this product right now.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That's all from my side.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Ankush Mahajan from Axis Securities. Please go ahead. Mr. Mahajan.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. And
Mr. Mahajan's line is disconnected. We'll move on to the next question from the line of Kunal from Carnelian.
Please go ahead. Hello.
Mr. Kunal?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
We can hear you, sir. Please go ahead with your question.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. I just wanted to understand, in this current quarter, you have done about 97 crores in specialty and 97 crores in CMS in comparison to 58 crores and 69 crores respectively in the last quarter. During the last quarter, if I understand correctly, we had some delayed deliveries in both the segments. So just wanted to understand that this 97 odd crores, if you could help understand briefly, what would be that amount which was pertaining to the last quarter, which got delivered in the current quarter?
Yeah, so I think when we talked about our performance in the last quarter, there was an indication that there has been some projects that have been delayed and therefore the numbers could have been higher. I think with regards to that question, probably, Kunal, what I would say is whatever delays would have happened in that quarter are probably a part of these numbers that we are right now forecasting or what we have actually executed. But I think it's also important to take into consideration that, you know, we see, since we are executing several projects, there is a continued sense of rollover. So again, you know, we've done 97 crores this quarter, but perhaps if we had absolutely no delays in this quarter, we would have done more. So there is, in that sense, a spillover even from this quarter to next quarter. So I think I would, you know, ask you to take my opening remarks into consideration that what we have done this quarter, which is around 96, 97 crores, is in some way not a one-off quarter. It's not that we've had a lot of stuff from last quarter spilled over into this quarter and therefore we did 97 and 97. It's just that, you know, yes, we've had spillovers into this quarter, but having said that, this quarter is also a, in some ways, a sustainable quarter. So it's not like, you know, 60 is the steady number and 97 is a one-time number. That's how much I can clarify.
Okay, okay, fair enough. And just coming to the prime segment, right? So now we have been doing like about 90 odd crores in the last two quarters. So how should one look at this particular segment going ahead now? I mean, as you have mentioned that we've been focusing more on specialty CMS and that's getting reflected in our GP margins as well, which have been clocking very good. But for the overall revenue thing, you guided for 20% revenue growth in this year on revenue count. So is that guidance on track considering all the segments?
Yeah, I think just to clarify, we not provided any guidance in terms of how our revenue would progress. I think in terms of the prime category itself, I think there has been, for us, the biggest impact on prime has been because of levetiracetam. And I think that continues to be a concern for us. If even in this quarter, we have seen a subdued performance of levetiracetam, if not, we would have probably had a higher revenue number. And I think for us, it remains a little bit of a concern because we are not very clear in terms of how and when we will recover. I think other than levetiracetam, I think to a certain extent, mirtazapine also has been a little bit muted compared to how we did last year. I think if not for these two products, I think the rest of the product portfolio in prime is doing well for us and everything else is moving as per our budgeted numbers. And I think mirtazapine also we are seeing a little bit of slowdown because we had some sort of, you know, tenders and all last year which are not happening this year. Maybe they will happen later in the year. I think levetiracetam is where there's been a reduction in terms of the volumes that our customers are taking, and I think we've seen these kind of cycles in the past with levetiracetam and some of our other products. Yeah, it's not of a long-term concern. I think we continue to be very competitive in levetiracetam and we continue to add new products. So I think we expect it to come back sooner or later.
Fair enough. Just one last question, if I may squeeze in. Our quarterly run rate of other expenses, you know, I mean, which was 55, 56 for the last four quarters, has gone up to 63 odd crores in the current quarter. So how should one look at that? Any one-off over here, or I mean, how should one read that?
I think there has been no one-off specifically in the other expenditure that we've seen. So I think this should be something which we forecast to happen on a continued basis.
And most of the expenses, Kunal, are related to investments that we are making in our capabilities, in R&D, in manufacturing, for new product developments, so on and so forth. So, you know, we expect, though we've kept a strong cap on our expenses, a lot of initiatives to keep them under control, there's no one-off items that are reflected in the specific quarter. So they will continue.
Okay. And our Unit 3 is breaking even, or there's still time for Unit 3 to break even?
We've not disclosed what the Unit 3 levels are, but I think broadly speaking, it's not yet there, but I think by the end of this year, we should be in a good position.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Thank you. I'll join back in the queue.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Ankush Mahajan from Axis Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, and congrats for a good set of numbers. Sir, my question is related to the autochromous CMS division. In the last quarter, we have been told that there is a delay in shipments, or the orders have been cancelled, we can say in this way. So any update on that one? That is, spillover order was there in the CMS? Or, sir, in another way, I just try to understand that what kind of a capex we already have done for the CMS, and what kind of the revenue that we are looking on that, sir. If you throw more light on the CMS, I really appreciate, sir.
We had just clarified this first question earlier, saying that whatever spillovers had happened have been delivered this quarter. And having said that, what we have done this quarter, we consider to be a steady performance. So I believe that question is answered. I think second question, maybe Bharadwaj, you want to answer?
I think the second question is there specific capex which is done for CMS projects? And I think if we, all our capex is done both from a GDS and CMS perspective, even if there is a project which is specific to CMS, the overall investment is done on the basis of the fact that it will be fungible capacity. Mm-hmm. So they are all multi-product facilities, so we would not be able to say that this is the capex amount for CMS projects.
I agree, sir. I'm feeling a very good set of numbers for this specialty division. So I just try to understand, sir, paliperidone, donepezil, and Axabrin, these molecules are given there. Sir, any plan to launch a new molecule in the second half? And what are the five current molecules that are contributing to the revenue of specialty, sir?
So, Ankush, to answer your question, you already mentioned three of the products contributing to specialty revenues. On top of that, I think another product which we did mention even in our press release is ezetimibe. And I think if you look at our business, we actually develop products many years in advance. And the launch of these products in the market is actually dependent on our customers, when they are able to get approvals and how rulings happen in terms of patent and so on and so forth. So to a certain extent, our responsibility, our job is to ensure that we select the right products and that we develop them. So I would not be able to answer if we are launching any products in the H2, but what I can assure you is that we have a very healthy pipeline of products, and customers are looking to us for those projects, and we will continue to see good traction from the new products.
That's good, sir. So a last one about this CMS side. So any update answers a few molecules that we are looking on for commercialization and in the developmental stage that can add revenue now?
I think on the CMS side, we had mentioned earlier that we have, you know, a table that we publish every quarter. And I think if you look at the table, you'll see that there are some molecules listed in phase 3 development and commercial. I think they are the candidates for us that are likely to provide good stable commercial revenue in the future. And as we had also mentioned in some of our commentary earlier, in the next year or two, we expect, you know, at least maybe 2 to 3 molecules getting commercialized. And I think in the last 2 years also, we've had at least 2 new additions to the commercial segment of our category. So I think we do expect, you know, a steady transition of molecules from development into commercial, and those should contribute to commercial revenues for CMS, and I think that's what will contribute to the growth of the CMS business as well. But we cannot give specificity in terms of which molecule, which indication, etc.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for my questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to answer all queries, kindly restrict your questions to 2 at a time. We have a next question from the line of Ritesh Oswal from Opal Industries. Please go ahead.
Congratulations. Last year you have lost one customer. Have you started supply to them?
Sorry, can you clarify what customer are you referring to?
Under CMS, you lost one customer in last year that deteriorated our product.
So I don't think we have lost any customers, and with respect to last year, I think the only project that we said was that there is a antihistamine where the product has become generic. So therefore, where we've lost revenues from that, that was the only reference. There has been no loss as such in terms of any customer.
Okay. One more question. Can we expect same EBITDA level in Q3 as a dollar depreciates? Sorry, INR depreciates?
So I think even as Saharsh had mentioned during his speech, we expect our business mix to be similar even in Q3. And therefore, you would see that the margins this quarter are driven by the business mix and certain conditions being in our favor. So when it comes to Q3, the numbers will be a reflection of the business mix and also the external conditions too.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Santanam Surendran, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you, and congratulations on the good set of numbers. My question was on the utilization of Unit 3. If you want to just put a number to it, and what is that you expect for the next half of this year? And are there any US FDA inspections lined up in the near term?
Yeah, I think with respect... Can you hear me?
Yes, now yes.
Okay, good. No, I think with Unit 3, that's a difficult question to answer because we're constantly investing in Unit 3 and expanding, and we keep adding products at the same time. So the capacity continues to evolve. Having said that, currently there's no inspection which has been formally announced. We are expecting to be... inspected as we do continuously, but as of now, there's nothing on the card.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Keshav from Raksan Investors. Please go ahead.
So just one observation. So the later stage, soon to be commercial and commercial molecules, have gone up in the recent past, and you also mentioned about increasingly focusing on this area and choosing the candidates wisely over there. But just want to understand if we are selectively foregoing a lot of early stage opportunities as well. I mean, if we were getting a certain kind of inquiries 5 years back, are we getting on an average a bigger number of early stage inquiries, but we are much more selective now to choose from it? Is this the correct observation?
So frankly speaking, I don't think we are there, Keshav. I think we would ideally in the future get to a stage where we want to focus more and more on late-stage molecules. But I think today, if you see how our pipeline is progressing, I think even this quarter we've added, I think, like three or four preclinical assets. We've added one or two phase one assets. And I think the way the business is evolving, I think two things are very important, I think, for investors, analysts also to note. The timelines between preclinical phase one to commercial is gradually reducing. I think especially U.S. companies are becoming more aggressive in their development timelines, especially post-COVID. So I think it bodes well for a CDMO to keep continuously working with early-stage assets also, because early-stage assets are also accelerating very quickly into late-stage and commercial. However, having said that, in the long term, as we have to keep focusing and becoming more selective, we'll have to come up with a subtle way of looking at assets which are adding more value to the company. But I would not say the assets which are adding more value to the company are necessarily only late-stage molecules. Sometimes we may not want to do a phase three molecule for a particular indication, and we might want to do an orphan indication for phase one. So I think there is a lot of qualitative work done in how one screens for business, which I think is a relevant question. I think we would like to get to a stage where we will be screening for business. Today, I think we do it only a little bit, not so much.
Okay, sir. And sir, in the NCE pipeline, have any of our clients seen any in-licensing deals in the past 2 to 3 years for the substance we are selling?
So if I have to understand your question, Keshav, you are asking whether any of our customers have seen in-licensing. I think considering that we have close to 30 or even as much as 50 customers for our 87 odd projects. So we see that there's been both a mix of in-licensing as well as out-licensing activity which happens. So there's nothing specific relevant to our business which we need to comment on.
Okay, sure, sir. And sir, another a long short question again. So we've been either hearing about nearshoring from EU and US, and now the rhetoric is moving between outsourcing or nearshoring. So understood that the CNS business is strategic and short-term moves don't happen. But from a longer-term perspective, is there any directional shift in, say, CDMO capacity coming up in EU or US closer to the customers?
I think it's a very good question, and I think many of us in the pharma industry were at an important trade conference last week called CPHI. And I think one of the takeaways that we had was that European CDMOs are also quite active in terms of getting some of the business from biotech companies as well as big pharma, and they're also looking at creating capacities. So I think there will be a continued challenge from European-based CMOs. I think that challenge will be more prevalent when we are competing for business with European companies. I think when you are competing with business for a US company, maybe you might still have a little bit of an advantage. But that's kind of one way to look at it. Sujit, anything you want to add?
No, I think very similar as she was commenting. I think generally, and I will stick our neck out and say this, but I think it's going to be the European API companies and the Indian API companies that are going to become the formidable supply base for most of the pharmaceutical markets across the world. So I think we're seeing it as an opportunity. Our investments reflect that, and our investments of the future will also reflect the same. So
thanks a lot, sir. Thanks for answering all my questions, and all the best for next quarter. Thank you.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Sajal Kapoor. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, thanks for the opportunity and congratulations for a very reassuring set of performance this time around. My question is, an Indian CDMO-dominated player with a, is a relatively large-sized player, and recent commentary was that they have seen some attrition and loss of skilled manpower in their overseas operations. Are we seeing any similar trend here in India? How is the attrition levels looking from an industry perspective as well as from Neuland's perspective? Thank you.
The call right after we answered the previous question.
No, no problem, no problem. So my question is, this NC scale-up and this novel synthesis is a very skill-intensive. You need a certain capability in scientific resources, you need a certain infrastructure, and one of our Indian large CDMO dominant players, the recent commentary was that they are seeing some attrition in their overseas facilities. So they operate out of Europe and US as well in addition to India. And in their overseas facilities, there's also an attrition in the CDMO space. Are we seeing any higher than normal attrition levels in India, or are we struggling to hire the kind of scientific talent that we need to scale up these novel chemistries? Yes, thank you.
Okay, are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Yes, so Sajal, since the voice came out really low, I'm just going to repeat the question. Just please confirm if my understanding of your question is correct. What you're saying is that for these new chemical entities, scaling them up, requires a lot of not just infrastructure but also scientific talent, and for executing these projects successfully, does Neuland have any challenges on the scientific capabilities or resources itself? Is that your question?
Absolutely, absolutely. This is my question, because some of our other Indian players who operate in this sort of domain, they have highlighted this risk mainly from their overseas operations. So they operate out of, they've got a large base in US and Europe in addition to India. So they were sounding, cautious on their overseas operations regarding exactly this scenario. But is it a risk for Neuland and Indian industry as well?
Yeah, I would agree with the comments that you made based on what you had understood from the industry. I think as we are dealing with not just CMS molecules, but also with the specialty APIs in our business, scaling these kind of molecules is a lot more challenging than the prime APIs, because there's a lot of prior art and information available about the scale-up of these molecules. But when it comes to these new chemical entities especially, and when you're working with biotech companies, you're pretty much independently handling the project. And it's kind of like a turnkey project where you're not really getting a lot of insights, information or guidance from the customer. And in those kind of situations, I think our scientific competence and our scale-up expertise is very important. And some of the delays and challenges that we have talked about in the last year or 2 years are also a result of handling this kind of complex business. So definitely I would not shy away from admitting that it is a challenge. However, I think that's an area that we are also investing a lot of time and resources on. I think, getting the right kind of scientific talent, not just for the labs, but also for scale-up and for manufacturing. I think that's very important. So we've been steadily building a pipeline of leaders, not just at a senior level, but also at a team lead level, at a scale-up level in the manufacturing area. People who understand the techniques of quality by design, who are able to, study the reactions holistically before scaling them up is very important. And for that, it's not just the scientific talent, but also the right kind of infrastructure, you know, ability to, you know, study the reaction progression and making proper, you know, analysis of it before going for scale-up. That's very important. So I think it's infrastructure coupled with the right kind of scientific talent. And, you know, one of the things, like, we've been investing steadily in building proper infrastructure in R&D as well as scale-up, you know, instruments like FBRM, you know, RC1s, different kinds of polyblocks for studying, you know, crystallization patterns. I think all these have become very essential, which maybe were not so essential when you are doing just prime APIs. And I think while it may not be possible to have or replicate the scientific talent that is available in the West, what can also be done is, you know, have the right kind of scientific advisors, consultants to also guide you. And I think Newland that way is fortunate to have, you know, the right set of advisors who we are able to also kind of tap into and help us troubleshoot when we have challenges. So I think that's kind of a slightly long answer, but it's something that is obviously a high priority for the organization even going forward, to keep having the right kind of talent, either as full-time employees or as scientific advisors.
You know, long answer is really helpful, Sukhir, and I wish you guys all the very best for future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Midun, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Well, thank you for taking my question. I have asked earlier a question regarding the molecule tirzepatide. Sorry to presume more regarding this. If my understanding is correct, the innovator who launched this product, Eli Lilly, has the patent for this molecule up to 2036. I'm not understanding then how we are getting demand for the generic version of the molecule now. Can you provide more clarity regarding this aspect? Are we a partner for Eli Lilly for this molecule? Thank you.
So, Vidin, what you need to understand is, here from the generic business perspective, customers would invest in some of these products even 10, 15 years in advance. Some of the projects, like, say, even apixaban, we had developed back in 2015, and now only we are seeing traction. For these projects to be first in, to be the first to file, customers need to be able to file at this point of time, or rather start development at this point of time to file at the date of NC-1, so that they will have, say, exclusivity or any other rights once the product goes generic. So those are investments which we are making. And even if you look at our products which we are selecting, some of the products are, we are actually selecting for the next half of the next decade. And that is how this business is.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Maulik from Anand Rathi. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity.
Maulik, your volume is very low. Can you use the handset, please?
Sure. Hello. Is it better now?
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Please go ahead. We can hear you.
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity. I just want to understand. You broadly explained, sir, that this is not a one-time or one-off revenue for CMS and specialty business. But just wanted to broadly understand that what is our expected run rate for H2 in terms of CMS and specialty business, and if there's any addition or deletion in terms of products or revenue-wise diversion. So just wanted to understand on that aspect.
So we don't have any guidance for H2, but I think what I will just kind of reiterate, Maulik, is that the performance of Q2, I think, is a good representation of what we can possibly do going forward.
However, there would be a quarter-to-quarter variation. There would be a product mix-related impact on margins, and there could be other factors which could have a positive or a negative impact as well. So I would, you know, probably leave that to the individual judgment to figure out how H2 is going to be. So I think, you know, definitely when it comes to CMS, as we've been maintaining, we've had a flat FY22, and FY23 was always going to be a year of growth, given especially that FY22 was flat. And I think we've also, you know, I think just given the fact that there are a lot of molecules moving from phase three development into commercialization, I think over the next 2-3 years also, we expect to have a healthy growth for the CMS business and thereby for the overall business as well. So I think that's kind of what I would say, and probably not comment too much on how H2 will be vis-à-vis H1.
Okay, sir. Okay. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. I would now like to hand over the call to management for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Yeah. We'd like to thank everyone once again for joining the call and for asking us very pertinent questions regarding our performance this quarter and also the outlook. As we have stated, I think this quarter is the result of the direction in which we have been steering the company. This is not something that we believe will be a one-off, but rather the direction in which we'll continue to see the business happening. So once again, thank you for all the questions. We look forward to receiving any further questions too in the future. We'd be glad to respond. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Newland Laboratories, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.